For the past 50 years, many of Ohio's best-paying jobs have disappeared. Communities have suffered. State government appears to have been powerless to turn things around. Last week, we talked about what happened and why, and today we're going to get into a bit more of the look at what we might see as potential solutions. And we're going to frame some key questions that you should be asking Rich Cordray and Mike DeWine, who want to be your next governor. That's all up next today on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
We welcome back into the studio Bill Shakerty, who is a distinguished adjunct professor at John Glenn's College of Public Affairs at Ohio State, and Dr. Fran Stewart, Senior Research Fellow at Ohio State's Ohio Manufacturing Institute. They are the authors of an extensive analysis of the topic entitled Toward a New Ohio, and they describe their work as looking at the intersection of politics and economic realities. Bill, if you would, thanks for being back again, both to you and Fran, for joining us again after last week's show. But a recap, the report Toward a New Ohio, what was its purpose?
Well, the purpose is you've got, for the first time in a number of years, non-incumbents running for governor. So you're going to have a new governor. We thought this would be a good time to attempt to raise the level of the public debate over what that governor is going to do in terms of improving Ohio's economy. So it's more in terms of posing questions to the governor for what his answers are going to be, as opposed to saying you should do this or you should do that.
So, Fran, here's the easy job for you. We spent an hour on this last week, but in the next 2 or 3 minutes, give us a recap of what we covered last week. And that basically was what happened to the Ohio economy from the late 60s through today. Kind of just give us the overview of what that mega trend looked like.
Well, Ohio has witnessed a steady decline in its economic well-being compared to the nation as a whole over the past 60 years. In 1953, Ohio's per capita personal income was 9% above the national average, and it's now more than 9% below. And much of this decline can be directly traced to the loss of 700,000 high-paying manufacturing jobs since manufacturing's peak in 1969, or manufacturing's employment peak in 1969. And many factors have contributed to that. What often gets focused on is foreign competition, but domestic competition, meaning companies that relocated to other states, that's been important, but the biggest contributor by far to the loss of manufacturing jobs has been automation. And so the automation has been has cut the number of Ohio workers, but it's also allowed Ohio manufacturers to be competitive and to produce twice what they did 50 years ago with half as many workers. So that's kind of in a nutshell where we stand today.
And one other point, the pain that has been felt in Ohio, not felt equally in all areas, correct?
That's true. It's tended to be that the large cities have, even those like Cleveland and Cuyahoga County that have suffered large losses of manufacturing jobs, they have a more diversified economy, and so they've been able to offset many of those losses in other industries like insurance and healthcare. But the smaller cities and the rural counties around the state have struggled to figure out what their new economy looks like and where the jobs of the future for them are going to be.
And that's something we want to talk about, but one very broad observation from last week, Bill, the bad news, while we are creating new jobs in Ohio, these are not the ones that made it possible for more than a million Ohioans to have a middle-class lifestyle 40, 50 years ago.
Well, we're creating some, but it's not enough, and it's not enough to offset the loss of the other jobs. So that's the major challenge that we face.
So let's pick up that after that recap of last week's show and start looking a little bit down the road. We touched on some of this, but I want to get into it in more detail. Bill, what are the jobs, the new jobs, the future jobs of Ohio? What are they going to be? What are people going to be able to be employed doing on a daily basis?
Well, we're beginning to see some of that. One, I would call advanced manufacturing. You know, when I think in my mind of manufacturing traditionally, it's some guy shoveling coal into a blast furnace, you know, or with a riveting something onto a car. Advanced manufacturing now will be a worker working with robotics or robots in a way to produce stuff. So you really have a need for workers in advanced manufacturing. And those jobs pay well. They don't necessarily require a college degree, but they do require training beyond high school. So that's one. Another one would be this whole area of data analytics, using data to improve whatever business you have. That usually does require at least a two-year degree, sometimes a four-year degree, sometimes a PhD. Another big area is healthcare, and that's the whole gamut from personal care assistants to physicians and advanced researchers. You also have renewable energy, which is a big field, which has the potential of allowing us to provide the energy to grow more cheaply without polluting the environment. And there are plenty of jobs in that area all the way up and down the diameter. And Ohio is particularly well located because of our central location in the area of logistics, warehousing and moving stuff and that kind of thing. So there are opportunities there to seize. The key is to seize the opportunity, have the jobs and the workers to fill them.
Fran, as you listen to that, those types of jobs that Bill just described, and he made the point that some are going to be higher paying than others, but maybe fill in some blanks there for us. Some of the biggest job area types of job growth that I saw from your report include such things as accountants, registered nurses, machinists, home healthcare aides, and the wage discrepancy there is extreme. I mean, from a low of a little bit less than $9 in the food service to more than $30 as an auditor or an accountant. Talk a little bit about just how widespread that job, that wage capacity is.
Well, right, Joe. So the area that is projected to have the largest 10-year increase in jobs is healthcare. And so in 2014, we had nearly 800,000 Ohioans working in, as Bill said, doing sort of a gamut of occupations in healthcare that are range from the high kinds of occupations of doctors and nurses that pay really good wages to more personal care, home health aid type jobs. So we already have almost 800,000 people working in healthcare, and through 2024, we were supposed to add another 150,000 jobs. And many of those are going to be in areas like home health aides, where they make less than $10 an hour. Another area that's supposed to see high growth is in the retail sector and in food service and preparation. And those, again, are jobs that pay relatively low wages for their workers.
We weren't want to, as I said, spend most of our time looking ahead because we're going to be electing a new governor for Ohio here come November. But still, we need to look back just a little bit more. One of the more fascinating parts of the report, Bill, that you and Fran wrote that I read, it looks at a very specific point in time, a panel at Ohio State University back in 1960 in terms of asking some of these questions. And again, oversimplifying, nothing came out of what was probably a pretty good opportunity. Did I get that right?
You got it partially right. The group were a group of OSU alumni who were in business and engineering and technology. And what they said, they were looking at the state in the period after World War II, were saying the nation's economy is changing. We have been building tangible things like cars and trucks and farm equipment and washing machines and dryers and all that. But where the economy seems to be going is in the more electronic-oriented areas, which would be advanced instruments, even televisions, transistors, and that type of thing. And if Ohio doesn't invest in that technology, we're going to be left behind. And in fact, we're going to grow less in per capita income and less in tax revenues and all that. That part, and unfortunately, the report was never followed up. And they were correct in predicting what would happen. The point I make, though, in that the friend I make in that report, and it shows why it's such a mixed bag and such a difficult thing. Ohio did 5 years later do exactly that type of investment, and that was something called the Transportation Research Center, which is now out near Marysville, and the state put together a high technology transportation research testing facility that built on Ohio's strength in automotive and other goods. And in fact, that was very successful. It's been successful in helping to recruit Honda here. And now they're looking at it for driverless vehicles. So that's a case where something has worked. But even though that worked, it wasn't by itself enough to arrest the decline in Ohio's economy. So that's the challenge we face in the future.
Fran, you and Bill in the report walk through, just not in depth, but a little bit through some of the things that have been tried by our past governors. So we had Jim Rhodes and John Gilligan, Dick Celeste, George Voinovich, Bob Taft, Ted Strickland, John Kasich. Let's go back to, Bill just mentioned Honda. That's probably Mr. Rhodes's greatest legacy, is helping to bring Honda to Ohio. But if we've got this discrepancy in what we're doing and what we should be doing, let's look at past administrations and whether or not they were able to accomplish anything. Let's start with Jim Rhodes. How did Governor Rhodes do with your hindsight now?
Well, so Rhodes did focus on jobs and progress. And actually, I would probably defer to Bill's knowledge in the political arena. But Rhodes... did, as you point out, that his legacy was Honda. His legacy is expanding the community college and higher education network throughout the state. And he had a goal of putting a campus within 30 miles of every student in the state. And he also focused on improving vocational education. So he can be looked back as a model for other governors who followed.
Yeah, it's a good point. And all the things Fran said that Rhodes gets credit for are correct. The criticism of him is that he was too backward-looking and not forward-looking, and they called it chasing smokestacks. So it was a lot of bringing traditional industry, and fortunately some of that has fared very well, Honda being an example, but it missed out on the higher tech stuff. So it's interesting, the governors that followed Jim Rhodes, the two that followed him, John Gilligan and then Dick Celeste, both emphasized moving into more of the higher tech stuff. Gilligan in terms of professionalizing the development department, Dick Celeste in terms of the eminent scholars and the research type of things.
Well, we want to follow up on this line of discussion on what some past governors have done, because we want to talk about some suggestions for our new governor, whoever he may be. We'll be back to talk more on this subject with our experts from Ohio State when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
Down on the assembly line, I keep putting the same things up. He just ain't buying. Nobody can't figure it out. They try like hell to build the quality in. They're working hard without a doubt. Ordinary people.
The report Toward a New Ohio makes the case that the manufacturing sector in Ohio has changed considerably. It has had significant major effect on the Ohio economy, and that perhaps we need to be rethinking which way the Ohio economy is headed. And two people who should do that rethinking are Mike DeWine and Rich Cordray. The report's called Toward a New Ohio, 12 Questions for Ohio's Next Governor. It was written by our guest today, Bill Shakurdy of Ohio State, and Dr. Fran Stewart, also of Ohio State. We were running down, Bill, that before the break, Fran mentioned some of the things that Jim Rhodes was known for. You touched on Gilligan and Celeste sort of modernizing the thinking of what it's going to take to bring jobs to Ohio. That brings us up to George Voinovich, Bob Taft, Ted Strickland, kind of just a quick overview of how those guys did.
And let me start by saying all the governors, whether Republican or Democrat, tried to do something. I wouldn't call them a failure, but none of them has been able to totally change affect the curve, which is in part a reflection of national and international trends, but we have an opportunity to do better. What each governor offered, for example, Governor Voinovich wanted to stress the cooperation between local governments and development agencies in the state because location decisions are really local. They aren't state. People don't come to Ohio per se. They come to a location in Ohio. Governor Taft had a number of initiatives. The Third Frontier, which was designed to provide more investment in high tech. He also did a number of changes in the tax laws, which were supposed to make Ohio more attractive to industry. Governor Strickland followed up on a lot of those changes, even though he was in bad economic times. He also established the University System of Ohio, which was designed to make Ohio's colleges and universities more in line with the skills needed by employers. And then there are a variety of things Governor Kasich did as well. Some have been more successful than others, but we still have a number of challenges ahead of us.
So, Fran, how about picking that up there with Governor Kasich? Heading into the final months of his administration, give us your view of some of the things that he tried to do, successfully or not, to help reboost Ohio's economy.
Well, so Governor Kasich, he privatized Ohio's development efforts in what's known as Jobs Ohio, and he created special tax incentives for small businesses. And then one of the areas that I'm probably most intrigued by was his efforts to transform the workforce system so that it's more aligned with business skill needs, and that's in the area of the Office of Workforce Transformation.
I'll throw this out for both of you. Fran, maybe start here. One of the points that you make in the report is this, Bill called it earlier, chasing smokestacks. What's the best practice to go out and find one or two or three super large firms like a Honda or a Whirlpool, or to go out and find 10 or 12 or 15 smaller sized firms? Is there any answer to that question of which way is best to attract manufacturing to Ohio?
Well, it's if you can be the one that lands those opportunities, then that can prove incredibly beneficial for your communities. I mean, the best case in point for Ohio is the landing of Honda. Honda has been huge, not only for Marysville, but for all of the companies that supply Honda that have grown up in the surrounding area. So Honda was a huge win for Ohio, and continues to be a huge win for Ohio. But the chasing smokestacks can also turn out relatively ugly for states that go down that path.
Quick example is next door here, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
I see there's a quick example you could share of what happened next door in Pennsylvania.
That was when they went after the Volkswagen plant in the 1960s. And I think I'll defer to Bill to tell the story on that.
Yeah, sure. That was the Volkswagen Rabbit plant, and it never produced the jobs it was supposed to and went empty in a short period of time. The other one that's an interesting case is the Foxconn plant that's going into Wisconsin that they created, I think offered something like $3 billion in tax incentives. And those are the kinds of jobs, it's making small screens for cell phones, that will probably be automated before that thing pays off. So one of the things Fran and I point to in our paper, that the Honda example is a great, wonderful example, and we ought to celebrate that. But more often than not, if you're just chasing those big names, that's so competitive and you have to offer so much, it's hard to make that a winner. So the thought would be maybe you're better off chasing what some have called the homegrown gazelles, the smaller firms that have the opportunity to grow. And what people forget is that Amazon started in a garage in a suburb of Seattle. What Ohio ought to do instead of trying to, we have to try to get the second headquarters. We may get it or may not. But instead of putting all our chips in that basket, because only one place is going to get it, and that may or may not work out, is to figure out where are the opportunities of growth of smaller firms that are here in Ohio that could be the Amazons of tomorrow.
Bill, where do folks find the...
Go ahead, Fran.
We'll get 10 seconds here.
Traditionally, like the approaches have been either to do things that try to cut the costs of doing business through tax cuts or direct incentives, or to make the kinds of investments that attract jobs indirectly by improving worker skills or helping with technology upgrades and upgrades to infrastructure and promoting entrepreneurship.
We'll come back and I'm going to ask you whether or not either of those work when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
Single mom with a dead end job, 90-hour week just to keep what she's got, but the bill's out of and now she's caught. She does what she can to survive.
We're chatting Ohio economy today with Dr. Fran Stewart and Bill Shakerty, both of Ohio State University, and a rather in-depth, long-term economic analysis of the Buckeye State, where we've been and where we might be headed. Fran, I had to cut you off because of the break there, but you were making the point that traditionally governments, whether they be state or local or whatever, they use a variety of ways to try and attract business into their region. It might be direct incentives such as a tax break. It might be that they've got to train, or that they'll train up the workforce. It might be that they'll put in the sewage lines and the roads and the whole infrastructure for to attract somebody. Do those carrots work? Does it actually bring business that lasts?
Well, they can work, and they have worked in some settings, but unfortunately in other states that have tried to do similar things, they haven't. And that's what makes it challenging to know the right policy direction to go in. So Texas, for example, has been very successful about in attracting and growing jobs by being having a very low tax environment, but Kansas has not, and Massachusetts has been very good at public investment, but it hasn't worked out as well in places like Illinois, and so some of this is at least somewhat dictated or constrained by the industry mix of the different states. And so sometimes it's going to, these chasing the smokestacks, sometimes they're going to work, but I would tend to agree with Bill that we need to be doing more of trying to figure out where our advantages lie and investing in those areas and trying to develop the environment that will be both attractive to places to locate, but also that will help our own homegrown activities thrive.
Yeah, I agree completely with Fran. I think just aping what other states do means inherently you're going to be behind. What we have to figure out is how we exploit what our natural advantages are and build on that.
So even if we do all of these things right that your study says might be of help, Bill and Fran, you also have a piece of this report where you reference the forgotten 35%. I don't know exactly what that means, but I feel like I don't want to be in them.
Okay. Well, what we mean by the, and again, there are two forgotten Ohios. The specific 35% we talk about there are people who don't have any education beyond high school. So they end up being food service workers or healthcare, those kinds of people. Those are important jobs. We shouldn't be looking down our noses at them, but we need to make sure if somebody's working full time and doing that work, they have enough that they aren't they can have health insurance, that they can advance to other jobs if they're capable. So it's remembering those forgotten people. The other group of forgotten people are the ones that live in the Mansfields and the Steubenvilles and the places that have lost jobs that haven't come back, and what we offer to them as well. And I think the gubernatorial candidate that can speak to both of those forgotten Ohioans and have some hope of over time making their lot better is going to be successful.
Yeah, and you also make the point that there are some non-targeted industries. We talk about all these things that we should be trying to incentivize or help boost, but not everybody's going to get that kind of attention.
Exactly, and some things are going to be here no matter what. One of the interesting conflicts you have here in Columbus is the use of tax incentives for developers to build apartment buildings downtown. Now, obviously, a thriving downtown for Columbus is a great thing, but what advantages do you have from tax incentives for that as opposed to, say, a homegrown Gazelle or another company that's growing as well? So local officials and state officials have to make some tough investment decisions. Then if we can, I like to use the Wisconsin example, that they're putting $3 billion or whatever it is into Foxconn. The question for Ohio is, would it be better to put that kind of money into one employer in one factory, or would it be better to put that kind of effort into growing multiple opportunities of future job growth in the future? And I think that's the interesting question.
Fran, only about a minute here.
Joe, I'd like to sort of clarify what the 35% is exactly that you'd referenced. That was the Governor Kasich's Executive Workforce Board, which is made up of business leaders and labor union leaders and nonprofit agency representatives and public officials. They set a goal that 65% of Ohioans aged 25 to 64 would have a degree, certificate, or some sort of post-secondary workforce credential by 2025, and that goal was set anticipating that we're going to need workers with those kinds of educational credentials to fill the expected jobs. But then that, as we point out, that leaves 35% of Ohioans who are sort of left out of where we think the economy is going.
Well, much of what we've been talking about leads up to a document that you and Bill prepared called 12 Questions for Ohio's Next Governor. It takes everything we've learned today and last week and much more and sort of simplifies what Mike DeWine and Rich Cordray need to be addressing for us come before November. We're going to follow up with our discussion with Bill and Fran on those 12 questions when we continue.
Turn back time, I'll make it up to you. What went wrong? Oh, can you tell me what went wrong? I need to know what went wrong.
If you've been with us today and last week, you've heard our guest today, Bill Shakurdy and Fran Stewart, explain that, frankly, a lot of things have gone wrong in Ohio for the last 50 years in terms of the trend lines of what's going on with our economy. They wrote the report toward A New Ohio, which concluded with a document called 12 Questions for Ohio's Next Governor. Fran, maybe give us some background on why you felt the need to actually raise these 12 questions for Ohio's next governor. What was the purpose of this?
Well, I tell people all the time that I don't have answers. I just always have lots of questions. And so I guess that sort of plays into the notion that Bill and I don't, the purpose of this report is to not to say that we have the answers, and we've talked about how thorny some of these issues are. But by raising the questions, we want to highlight how challenging these are, and we want to elevate the debate going on between the gubernatorial as well as legislative candidates, because these are important questions for Ohio's future and for the future of Ohio workers and their families. I mean, these are topics that deserve to be addressed and not minimized or addressed with platitudes. We need to be having a frank discussion about what the road ahead is for Ohio, and so we felt that the questions help to show what the candidate's priorities are. It allows newspaper folks and radio broadcasters to hold a candidate accountable. It helps to frame what the debate should be going forward.
So rather than run through each question, all 12 of them, Bill, you sort of have grouped them. One of the first areas is a discussion you'd like to hear these candidates have on stimulating the creation of new jobs in industry clusters. And then these clusters have the potential to diversify the state's economy and exploit its competitive advantages. I read it. You tell me what that means.
Okay. What we're saying is it's important to create jobs, but just not any jobs. How do you create high-paying jobs? And one of the things that seems to have worked in other states and also in Ohio is when you can have clusters of similar jobs or industries. That would be like the Silicon Valley or was it Route 126 in Massachusetts. So similar things come together, but you exploit what Ohio's unique advantages are in doing that.
And competitive advantage, besides the clustering of types of industries and jobs, Fran, what do you and Bill seem to think or see as some of Ohio's competitive advantages? What are we good at that would help us attract more high-paying jobs?
Well, partly what we're good at is what we've been traditionally good at. We just have to figure out how to continue to look for opportunities to add value to those kinds of by and large manufacturing or healthcare industry activities that we have been traditionally good at. So we do very high value added manufacturing activities in Ohio, and those need to be supported. But we can't just rest on that and hope that that's what carries us into the future. We have to be looking for opportunities to build on some of those activities, or we have to be looking for ways that we can use some of that expertise to move into other opportunities. But we also have to be open to what those new industries that none of us can even imagine at this point are going to be. And that means we have to just be supportive of an entrepreneurial ecosystem. We have to be making sure that people do have the right kinds of skills that are going to afford them the ability to seize on some of the technological advancements and the new economic opportunities that are out there. And so we can't just be looking at what we're good at now. We have to be figuring out how we can build on that platform and transition into what the new industries and occupations and activities are going to be.
Let me give you an example.
Well, I'll tell you what, you can have that time when we continue. We need to take a break, but we'll be back to hear more from Bill Sicardi and also Dr. Fran Stewart when we continue on Town Hall Ohio. Some long-term significant challenges face the Buckeye State in terms of our economy and jobs, and our next governor, be he Rich Cordray or Mike DeWine, is going to be challenged to fix some of those. And our guests in the studio today, Bill Sicardi and also Fran Stewart joining us by telephone, think that both of those gubernatorial candidates and our legislative candidates also should be thinking about what are you going to do next for the Ohio economy. I had to cut you off before the break. Fran was saying, let's do what we're good at, but let's find new things that we can be good at. You had an example of that?
Good example is we're good at building cars. The technology is moving towards driverless vehicles. We need to make sure they're developed here and built here. That would be one example. Medical devices is another one.
So
right,
what,
because that's the intersection of healthcare and manufacturing, right. Two strengths that we have. And so we are showing that we are leading in manufacturing medical devices.
I want to jump to one other thing. You have this document, 12 Questions for Ohio's Next Governor, and it's kind of broken up into three or four major themes. We've talked a lot about 1, 2, and 3 in terms of those themes, but Bill, you make the point that Ohio's Next Governor, we need to know how Ohio's Next Governor is going to develop political coalitions. Mm-hmm. So much of our capacity to make things better in Ohio depends on what's happening in Washington, D.C. Talk a little about that.
Absolutely. And the one we're going through right now is the debate over trade policy and tariffs and what we do or don't do regarding tariffs. And it can help one industry, and we're seeing it, you know, attempting to help steel. And there's obviously an important area there for Ohio, but that has implications for people that use steel and then people that sell agricultural goods, whether it's soybeans or whatever, to China, who is a perpetrator of trade unfairness in steel, but is a big buyer of Ohio soybeans. So those policies, and there are other states that are in a similar condition, so we need to make sure we're working as a coalition to make sure Ohio's interests are represented in Washington.
The exact wording on this, Fran, says engage allies and effective political coalitions. What other kind of allies are we talking about? Does it go beyond just federal government allies for Ohio's government?
Well, it can also extend to representatives in other states, and it can extend to industry associations that represent some of our major drivers of our economy and our major employers. But the challenge with that always is that, say, take the Great Lakes Compact, for example. There are reasons for neighboring states along the Great Lakes to work together to make sure that resource is protected. But at the same time, those states are also, in some ways, our competitors in other ways. And so that's what is sometimes tricky about forming these alliances.
Bill, I want to compliment both you and Fran for this report. It's got a lot of great information in it. You and Fran presented at the Columbus Metropolitan Club, which is where I learned about it. That led to us doing the show. It's great that Town Hall Ohio listeners are getting to hear about it, but what else is going to happen with this report? I'm certainly no economist, and I'm not a political expert, but there's a lot of important stuff in this mm-hmm. thing that people need to be thinking about. What's going to happen with it? Don't tell me this is one that's going to sit on the shelf.
Well, we hope not. And our sense is we're looking at the long game here, and it's kind of quiet right now. But we expect in the fall, as the campaigns heat up and as you get gubernatorial debates, whoever moderates that debate will be from the press corps. And we've made sure they have these 12 questions. So we're hoping that they, if the gubernatorial candidates aren't addressing those questions, that the reporters that are moderating the debates and people that are listening to the gubernatorial candidates when they come out start posing those questions to them and teasing out answers on these things so that the public can decide which way they think the state should go.
Fran, if folks want to read this report or read up on your 12 questions, is it easily accessible online someplace?
It is. It's available on OSU's Glenn College's website. So people can find it there, and I wanted to go back to your
quickly. We're about out of time. We're out of time.
First, I want to say thank you for the compliment. And as a former news journalist, I hope that reporters of all stripes will use this to ask questions of the candidates.
Our thanks to the report's authors, Bill Shakurdy and Fran Stewart, for joining us on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.